Hey, this incredible episode of the Juan Epstein Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Bevel.
Thanks, Bevel.
Get Bevel.com. Use the code Juan Ep. Change the way you shave and support the Juan Epstein Podcast. Cypher, how do you like the surprise I just hit you with?
I'm very surprised and very pleased.
So our guest today is the one and only Tracy Clardy.
Yeah.
This is like...
Woo-hoo.
I ran into her the other day at a party in L.A.,
Oh, look at you guys.
Yeah. And I started chatting her up.
Swashbuckling in LA. Yeah. I know that's not the right word, but fuck it.
And we were just chatting, and I was talking about how important she was, and I was gassing her and being honest and being like, introducing her to my brother. I was like, my brother walks over, I'm like, guess who this is? And he's like, I don't know, I'm like, Tracy Clardy. And he's like, no way. And then I was like, we should have her come to Juan Epstein.
Yeah. I wonder why we haven't. We've brought you up many times.
I mean, because we think about how many gaps we have. We have Miss Info's never done one Epstein.
Right.
Like, we have a lot of gaps.
Right. Angie.
But Angie hasn't done one Epstein. Now, but would you say that, I mean, is Tracy Clardy as important to the Hot 97 story historically as anyone? I mean, after Flex and Angie?
I think in the same level.
Same level, right?
Yeah.
Those are the three.
Wow.
Even Flex and Tracy.
Really?
Angie still came a little after. I guess in the story, yeah, it's the trifecta.
So, Tracy, where are you from?
I'm a Brooklyn girl.
Oh.
Born and raised in Brooklyn. Never left New York.
Whereabouts in Brooklyn?
I grew up in Sheepshead Bay.
Nice.
But I've lived in Manhattan now for... more years than I care to mention.
What is the name Clardy? Irish?
It's Irish.
Okay. And were you a hip-hop head growing up? Or I mean, I guess it wasn't like the early origins of hip-hop?
So, interestingly, I'm a rock chick. I make no bones about it. Everyone has always known I'm like an alternative rock chick. I did like hip-hop. My brother used to listen. I had two younger brothers. And they used to listen to Mr. Magic and Marley Marl on BLS. And so I did. I was a hip-hop head growing up, and I really liked it. But when I got into radio, it was the furthest thing from my mind that I would end up working or creating a hip-hop radio station.
Creating what is now the format of hip-hop radio.
Yes, we know it. Okay, real quick side note. Did one of your brothers pass away?
Yes, he did. Last year.
Just last year.
Oh, last year? Oh,
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you.
So yeah, my wife's brother passed away, and she always she's coming up on 5 years now, and still struggles with that have had siblings thing. It's like if you say it, it's a conversation, but in your head, you always have two.
Yes.
So it'll never. And she's the same. Two. She had two as well. So when you got into radio, you're thinking rock, like that's what you assumed you would do.
Well,
how did you get into radio in the first place?
Okay, so this is sort of an interesting story.
Yeah, we know. That's why you're here.
I was a radio junkie. I used to listen to WPLJ at the time, which was a rock station. Carol Miller was my idol. And then they switched to a pop station, and she moved over to NEW. And there was not a lot of female DJs. And I listened constantly, and I was one of those people that called in and requested songs and tried to win the contest. And... anyway, I was a bad student. I ended up dropping out of school. I
went high school?
High school.
Really?
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
I went back to school. I went to college. You know,
right.
I was educated. But at the time, I wasn't.
Right.
And I was working for a health club, and they had a PA system. So you announced when your class was happening. So I was on the PA system one day, and I said, oh, you know, the 12:30 aerobic class is starting upstairs with Tracy. And I was, I don't know, 14, 15 years old at the time. And I lied about my age to get the job. And some guy came out of the locker room and said, who is that on the microphone?
Oh, shit.
And I said, it was me. Why? And he says, you've got a great voice. You should get into radio. And I'm thinking, people got paid to do that? So when I decided finally to get my act together and go back to college, I took broadcasting. And I became the PD of the college radio station, which is how I ended
up. What college?
This was at Kingsborough Community College before I went to NYU. And I got an internship at what was then Hot 103, which was a dance music station.
Right.
And that's how I started with Emmis, and I stayed
there. So that was 103.5,
it was
which
103.5.
is now KTU.
Right. And then we switched dial positions to 97.1, and I was there in the studio when we actually switched the dial position, which was kind of historic, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, in retrospect, it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Wow, so your first internship in radio was with the company that you would be with for 20 years.
Yes, and it took me 13 years to go from intern to vice president, which seems like a really long time when it was happening, but now in retrospect, yeah, doesn't seem like a very long time.
No, to go from intern, from you know nothing, to you run the entire building. Or just short of the GM. Oh,
how did I do? I was a 17.
Sife, don't.
10. No, it took me 10 years to go from intern to morning show. So
10 years? Yeah.
Because I was there 17 years. Yeah, and we did the morning show seven, roughly.
Yeah. That's not that bad. Yeah.
But I wanted you on the morning show for a long time. I mean, you knew that was my plan.
Yeah. I've learned afterwards.
Oh,
yeah.
Hold on. We'll get there.
Yeah. This is going to be good.
Okay, so so you started as an intern doing what at 103.5? Just regular programming side?
I worked in promotions.
Okay, promotions intern.
Yeah, so I started in the promotions department, like, and at the time...
Like in a van or some shit? Like,
yeah, we used to hand out t-shirts and promotional shit. I hope I can curse.
You're fine.
Yeah, please.
They used to make us move the DJs. Like, interns right. didn't have the same kind of rights then that they do now.
Oh.
Like, the DJ needed to be moved, and you'd take the van, and you'd be carrying their stuff.
Yeah.
You know? So it was a little different.
So, but this, was anyone in the promotions department who ended up sticking around?
Yes. The head of the promotions department, Rocco Macri.
Rocco, wow.
So when you talk about the people that really helped create Hot 97, he should be named as well. And he certainly doesn't get his due, and he really deserves it.
If you're not on air or programming, it's hard to get the recognition you need.
But it's deserved because it didn't happen in a vacuum.
Yeah, no, and promotions is obviously very important, especially with a station that was as street popular as Hot 97.
They definitely don't get the credit, though.
No, they deserve it, though. And you know, the people that helped the imaging, you know, Alan Wilson, who is my creative services director, you know, it was all uncharted territory.
Yeah.
There was no such thing, and there was a lot of resistance to us doing it. Because they didn't think they could sell it. They didn't think it was going to be a viable commodity.
So what role were you in by the time, where had you grown to by the time it was ready to make the switch and become the Hot 97 that we know it to be?
I was the music director.
So you'd become music director when it was still a dance station.
Yes.
And Flex then started doing, you started doing these weekend night shows with hip hop.
But where did Steve come in? Steve Smith was like...
So Steve Smith was brought in as the program director, right. And we were already playing hip-hop. Like, we were already playing it and just sort of not telling anybody. We were just still, you know, Hot 97, dance music, and here's this LL Cool J Mama Said Knock You Out record.
Right,
right.
You know, and we just...
Something hip-hop with like a... You could still kind of dance to it.
Right.
You weren't playing, like, grimy underground, but you were playing, like, big hip-hop records.
We were, and... there was, you know, it was a very big conflict. The sales department didn't really want to go that way, and nobody knew if it was going to work. And we got this new program director who came from Phoenix, of all places.
Yeah.
And he was a very smart man, and he realized that we should probably ride the wave in the direction it was going. And he, you know,
why did they bring Steve in? What happened to the PD before that? He got fired, or?
Yeah, it was a mutual parting of the ways. He sort of, him and the GM did not really see eye to eye on the future of the radio station.
Who was that?
The GM, Judy Ellis.
No, the PD.
Joel Salkowitz.
Okay, yeah, I've heard these names. These are all names that I've heard through my history, but didn't know.
Yeah, the generation before that, are names I haven't even heard of.
Yeah.
It goes back to where I think the oldest PD I've heard of is Steve Smith.
Right.
That's the oldest name I've ever heard.
And he stayed for a few years, and then he went out to L.A., and that's when I took over as PD.
But you're music director when they decide to go...
Sorry, One Up is very, like, niche detail.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
You don't have to... You can't just glaze over.
Yeah,
like, we want to know, like, the shit.
So you're
MD.
So you're MD, and they decide they're going to go all hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
At this point... Is Camille doing all hip hop?
No. They were, you know what, I shouldn't say that. I'm not really sure of the time.
Because that always is a little bit of a debate of who's
and
the
K-Day,
full. And K-Day,
there's
sorry.
There's always like some K-Day talk.
They were definitely playing hip hop. I don't remember, you know, who played more first. And quite frankly, I don't think it's that important.
Yeah, but you guys didn't have one thing you were trying to model it after.
No, we were creating an entirely new model.
We were like, okay, this is, because at this point, we're talking about 92, 93.
Mm-hmm.
Hip-hop's already very, I mean, it's popular. It's not popular in the way that it is now, but it's a thing that's getting talked about right and left. There are stories about it.
It's not as popular as you would think.
It didn't feel that way in the radio world.
No, it didn't feel that way. And certainly you could see the signs, and it was selling, and you could see people were buying the records, and, you know, it was definitely in the streets, but it was not mainstream. And you didn't hear people using hip-hop slang like you do now.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, that was just...
Like news reporters.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it's everywhere now.
When I think about what we ended up creating, I realized we didn't just create a radio station. We created a whole culture that influenced a bigger culture.
Right.
Yeah. So, do you remember what happened when you guys made the switch to full?
But Flex was there though.
Yeah, Flex was already there.
Flex was there.
Was already doing weekends.
So we found Flex through a guy named Vito Bruno, who was a club promoter, and he was promoting this club called Home Base, which was a hip hop club. So one night, me and Vito and Steve Smith, who looked like Sammy Hagar, the whitest guy in the world, go to this hip hop club, and there's Flex up in the DJ booth. He's very shy.
Yeah.
And he said, yes, he'd do it, but he didn't want to talk on the radio.
He
now,
just wanted to mix.
Of course, you can't shut him
right.
the fuck up.
Well, that's your fault. Yeah. You did that.
Exactly.
But what, you liked the way he was playing in the club? Like, why Flex? Like, there was 1,000 DJs. Or there.
Well, we were looking for someone that was sort of new and up and coming, that right. already was, but established in the hip hop world.
Right.
That
he had a little radio experience.
He had a little bit, but we didn't want to take somebody.
You didn't want Kid Capri. You didn't want a name that was already completely established.
Well, we did. We ended up using Kid Capri for a lot of things, but we were trying this out. We were testing it.
Right.
So he came recommended to us, and we liked his vibe in the club, and, you know, we really wanted somebody that could be our own, you know,
right.
that could sort of grow with us.
Well, you nailed it. literally, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So was that Friday Night Street Jam? Is that what he started
yes.
right away? Was
yes.
the Friday Night Street Jam, and that was him playing all hip hop
yes.
at night.
Yeah.
And did you see, I mean, generally people don't talk about nighttime and weekend ratings, but did you guys see that people were keeping the radio station
yeah,
on?
Absolutely.
And you're like, they're not actually turning it off. They want to hear hip hop.
No, they definitely wanted to hear it. And then we extended it. I think it became the Saturday Night Street
yeah.
Jam. And then at some point when we decided, okay, we're going to jump into this pool. You know, we can't just, play a little bit and pretend.
Yeah. Let's do this.
We put him on like 6 nights a week.
And at that point, when he was doing Friday Night Street Jam, this is the end still of Kiss and BLS still doing mix show on Friday and
Not
Saturday
really
night
the
too.
End.
Not the end, but like the end of the glory.
Well, we know now it was towards
it was the
end,
end,
but it wasn't at the
at
time.
At the time it didn't seem like the
it
end.
It was the shit.
Right.
But that's still when they were playing their most hip hop too.
Right.
Was Friday night and Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but theirs was definitely an older feel, an older vibe. It was very limited. They weren't playing anything during the day. They day-parted heavily. They weren't taking chances on some of the newer stuff, like a Smith & Wesson,
yeah.
you know, things like that, you know, and we were.
See, it's so funny to even think about it. That,
yeah.
like, because relatively back then, all the old school guys were still pretty young, right? Like, Rakim was still young. They were all relatively young. But there was a difference between who had become sort of the established hip-hop acts
exactly.
and who was this 90s thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because the 90s is different. Now we know, because everyone throws parties, and they're 90s parties.
Right.
And frankly, to be honest, the cool throwback stuff is usually 90s now. The 80s is almost left out into its own separate category.
Yeah,
exactly.
For, you know what I'm saying? That you hear a little, like the party when I saw you the other day, D-Nice was great. And it was a...
Shout out to D-Nice.
Shout out to D-Nice. And it was James Lopez's party from... he works for Will Packer, the movie company. So it was like, it was called Culture Creators. It was like it was a Black Hollywood party.
Well, no, it's not. Culture Creators was created by Joy Brown from Atlantic Records.
And that's a party that already exists.
Yes.
That they brought over there.
Yeah, she started it. She and a couple of other people, and I don't mean to leave anybody out. I just don't know.
Don't worry, I left them completely out. So you're doing better than I was.
they had a party in New York about a couple of months ago that
okay.
was really off the chain, and I missed it. And it was all about 90s, the people that helped create the 90s hip-hop culture.
Shit.
You know, and it was, I'm told, and I'm really upset that I missed it. So it was supposedly great.
Mm-hmm.
And when they decided to do an L.A. one during the weekend of the Grammys, I was like, okay, no matter what else I'm doing that night, I'm going to make it my business to be there. And I'm glad I did.
Got it. So it was just a Culture Creators party that the person who invited me, who I knew of it from,
yes.
was this guy who works for Will Packer. So, but it was that kind of crowd, meaning for a Grammys weekend, I felt like it was the cool Black music Hollywood scene was kind of at
yes.
this party.
And
right?
there was some interest. I mean, like Diplo showed up.
Oh, yeah.
And
then Skrillex.
And
like
Chris Rock came.
Yeah.
You know.
It was like a good, cool mix.
Yeah.
But the vibe was, you know, even the way D-Nice played was mostly 90s, lots of Bad Boy, lots of Biggie. And then when you get the 80s moments, there's spikes for like 1 second.
Right. Well, it wasn't the same volume of music either in the 80s from hip hop.
No, you're right. I mean, it was completely, we always talk about that. It was when the genre wasn't even a full genre. It was
exactly. Like
at the record stores, it was part of the soul section. It wasn't even right. A full thing. So anyways, everything changes around this time as we get to the early 90s and you guys make the switch. What was the moment like? Was there press? Did people care? Like, did David Hinckley or whoever was there at the time write about this switch?
Yes. We did get quite a bit of press. And in the radio space, people sort of felt we were crazy. They just didn't think it was going to last. They didn't think that it was going to be a viable product, as I said earlier, or a sellable product.
Yeah.
And even if we got ratings, we still struggled with sales until people realized that, okay, this demographic is actually has disposable income and they are going to be, you're going to want them. You're going to want them to buy your products.
A fight that we're still fighting today.
You are still fighting it today, but it was really, really tough in the beginning.
I imagine back then it must have been really hard. So you had to convince sponsors like, hey, we're not going to be playing the dance songs that you may know. And I'm sure some of them liked that. And you're like, no, we're going to be playing all hip hop now. Were there people who just dropped out off the rip?
There were. I'm not an expert in sales. It wasn't my, you know, area. So I can't remember specifically. But yeah, we definitely had a changeover in sponsors. And we got a lot more, you know, direct business and instead of agency business for a while. And then that changed too.
So who else were the initial people besides Flex? Who else did you reach out to? I mean, the original voice of the station was KRS, right?
He did a lot of voice work for us and he did a Sunday night show. And we cherry picked a lot of people and we had them do specialty shows. You know, we had Mr. Magic, Marley Marl at one point. Then Marley and Pete did a show together.
Of course, Future Flavors. I mean,
Future Flavors.
Legendary, yes.
And then we had...
Wait, Future Flavors was KRS-One first?
It was.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, yes. That was his show.
Yes. And then we had Stretch and Bobbito. And, you know, we had... oh my God, Spinderella was on Ladies Night for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And
Evil D had a show.
Monday night. Evil D.
Yeah, he's the best.
And then we decided we had to do something about the morning show. We needed a morning show that was going to...
Was there any... What was mornings at the time? Did you still have the morning show from the dance station?
For a minute, we had some crossover where our first...
Where's Baltazar?
He was the night shock.
Okay.
Our first summer jam, which was at...
Love Baltazar stories.
our first summer jam, which was at the Meadowlands Arena at the time. I remember having our midday person, Deborah Rath... who is this tall, blonde, California woman. And she was wearing a cutoff Hot 97 t-shirt.
There we go.
She was trying to wear like, you know, cutoff shorts and Tim's. And I remember my boss turning to me and said, what have we done to Deborah Rath? This woman does smooth jazz now.
Oh, she does? Like, yeah, okay.
Like we were trying to sort of fit like, a square peg in a round hole. Yeah, and it was at that point where we realized we needed people that actually lived the lifestyle and enjoyed the
music.
How
was that summer jam?
We had everybody in the world on it, like Black Moon.
Yeah.
Like we had all of these like, you know, smaller acts and a couple of bigger name acts, but there was like 13 or 14 of them that had probably never been in a place bigger than 1,000 seats, let alone 16,000.
And this is summer jam 93, 94.
You can't ask me dates.
I know. I can tell already. You're not,
Was it sold out? Do you remember it being sold out?
It did sell out. It didn't sell out immediately, but it did sell out.
I can't believe a summer jam back then, like, it's rough.
Well, it's just interesting to think about because, you know, that's actually the one thing that, like, makes arguments hard for me, right? Like, I'm always having the argument with people of, like, Hot 97 has for a long, long time been more commercial than you realize because people act as if Hot spent 15 years playing All Black Moon. Right? And it wasn't like that.
Not true.
But at the beginning, it really was pretty underground out of the gate.
Yes, it was underground because this music wasn't being played. But we day parted and we played, you know, softer stuff. And at that point, there were some real legitimate hits. You know, Naughty by Nature had legitimate hits. And
yeah.
Here's the list according to Wikipedia for Summer Jam 1994, okay? Wu-Tang Clan, Queen Latifah, Arrested Development, Gangstar, Black Moon, wait for it, King Just.
He had a big record, man.
He had a big record. A Tribe Called Quest. Mm-hmm. Domino. Nas.
Domino?
Yeah, Domino. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Big record. Nas. Sudden Change. And SWV. Mm-hmm. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
I don't even know what Sudden Change is.
Some random R&B group from back
then. Right, because we needed to have balance.
You had to balance
and
it out.
And they had a hit. They had a hit record.
So it's not
a bad lineup, because considering how many of those are still relevant.
Yeah, right? I mean, the fact that you had Tribe and Wu-Tang on the same show, if you were able to pull that off for a festival right now, in 2016, you could go around the world and do like 40,000 seaters.
Yeah.
With Tribe and Wu-Tang as your headlining.
I can actually top that, though. We had, before we did Summer Jam, we had a promotion called Hot Night, which was sort of a holdover from when we were a Dance Station. And we had it at, I remember, at the Palladium. And we had Tribe, Leaders of the New School, Mary J. Blige, who brought Biggie out. She did like a whole 411.
Why not?
Remix album, you know, out there. I mean, so we had some Onyx. I mean, we had some crazy people on the precursor to what was Summer
Jam. And it's just the Palladium, like on a much smaller scale.
And we were shut down. Like everything was shut. Like, you know, the police shut us down. And it was just, we realized we needed to move into a bigger venue.
By the way, it bothers me that on Wikipedia, no disrespect, he's my guy, but on Wikipedia, the picture, the first, you know, they just choose like a random picture for the thing. It's T-Pain. Like that's, I love T-Pain, but it's totally random that he's the only picture. That is T-Pain, right? It's a weird picture of T-Pain. Right?
It looks like it.
I mean, that's a weird thing. Anyways, so how quickly does it become a thing? Does Hot 97 become like a real piece of conversation?
Very quickly, actually. Like within a year, you know, we really started to see the results. It was climbing and it was steady. It was a couple of tenths of a point, a tenth of a point, 2/10 of a point. But that adds up in radio.
Yeah.
When you were basically hovering in the high threes or fours, and you suddenly start to grow, and the growth just continued as we got a good morning show, and we really started to, like, hone what we were going to do, and we put together this marketing campaign, and again, props to Rocco Macri, who doesn't get props for it. We did Ed and Dre in these crazy costumes.
So is Ed and Dre the first iteration of the Hot 97 morning show?
You know what? There were other trials, things that we did in there, but that ended up being the first morning show that we put money behind and promoted.
Anyone else of note that got an opportunity at the morning show? Had to have dug some other people up.
You know what? I honestly, it was 20 years ago. No. I've smoked a lot of weed in my life.
Yeah. I mean, someone like Amoni Love, like someone else had to have gotten thrown in there.
Amoni was on the air.
She was on the air. Okay.
Not
she was
on
a
the
jock.
Morning.
She was one of our weekend people, too.
And
she's my girl. I still talk to her.
Oh, she's great. And Ed and Dre, you know, have a history at that point already. They are already a known commodity. And did they, was that was a big piece of the puzzle?
It was a huge piece because we had not made any noise in Morning Drive ever in any of the things that we used to have when we were a Dance Station. So this is the first time that we were, had a morning show that was sort of on a competitive level with other morning shows. And it was very, very targeted to the demographic we were looking to serve.
Now, how is this going for you at this point as a woman, as a white woman? Everything.
Oh, hello.
Hello. I mean, that had to be, I mean, I think, I'm trying to decide what I think's more noticeable. I'm guessing the woman part would probably be the source of more bullshit than the white part. But I'm sure there's a variety of everything. But like, I mean, hip hop was not progressive in 1994.
No.
I don't think like, were people really, like you being, and you were known, I mean, in my prepping for this interview, by talking with Ebro, and I was talking to Ashanti Culture this morning, who he credits you for, you're the first person who gave him a job, and he's been at the station ever since. And I mean, like, you've made your nickname. It still is. Ice Queen 212 is still your Instagram.
I didn't make that my nickname. Star gave me that nickname.
Oh, Star gave you that nickname.
Yes. And we'll get to that, I guess, sequentially.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get to Star for sure. But, like, so, but did you take...
She ruled with an iron fist, is what you're trying to say,
exactly.
Okay?
Like, did you take...
She ruled with an iron fist!
Sife, do you agree?
Yes!
I didn't have a choice. I mean, there was no other way to keep order. And as you point out, I was this woman, you know, a white woman thrown into... You know, not thrown into, I stepped into it knowingly, and I helped bring that. I mean, I'm one of the people that was the champion of making a hip-hop station. And I was out there. I was deep in the clubs. I was in...
That's what I was saying. How did you find out about records? Like, you were like...
I was deep...
Always on your game.
In the clubs. I was in Tunnel. I was in Palladium. Everyone knew to find me in Palladium on a Friday night. My best friend at the time ran the club. I used to be a smoker. We'd be upstairs smoking. The busboys would bring us drinks. People would find us. That's the first time that Jay-Z and Damon Dash, they found me at the Palladium. Like, they came and they knew where to find me. You can find me at Tunnel. You'd find me at all these different parties. I really lived the lifestyle. And it was hard at first, you know, to, you had to earn respect. You always have to earn respect. But I could not let people walk on me. So I sort of had to rule with that iron fist.
Where does that come from? Is that like your upbringing? Is that something you picked up? Like,
yeah, how'd you know that would work?
Like, did you have a tough family? You know what I'm saying?
Like, No, I just knew that there was no way I could be a doormat.
But what, you liked that when it was like hot, 103, you know, like when it was a dance station or when it became hip hop, you were like, all right, let me turn this shit on. Like,
you know, I think in certain circumstances, I probably was. There's probably something in me that is just naturally a more dominant person in that sense. But the situation didn't call for it. When you were a dance station, they didn't show up with 30 people.
Right, goons,
you know,
and shit,
packing weapons.
Yeah.
Like, I never had to deal with that until we became a hip-hop station. And I never had to deal with shootings or things, or people smoking weed in the studios.
Right, all
of these circumstances were new, and I had to deal with it at that moment.
But you're from New York, so...
I'm from Brooklyn.
So you've seen it.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, here's the deal. If I didn't keep that kind of order, there would have been a lot more disastrous occurrences.
Yeah.
And as it turned out, there are only a few disastrous occurrences.
Good ones, though.
Yeah, really classic ones. How much of the Wild Wild West was it in the station at the time? Like, the amount of weeds at first... When the doors open, I have to imagine the amount of rappers showing up and smoking blunts while they're there had to be crazy.
Not as many as you think, because we said, no, you can't do this. And they had never had the outlet of radio before. So they were happy to have the outlet too. So in some sense, they sort of were on their best behavior in a lot of ways, because it could go away.
Who were some of the people who were early friends of the station, artists who were like, I want to be here. I'm going to show up at the events. I'm going to be on air when you need me on air.
Yeah, like, who are the first Hot 97 artists?
Naughty by Nature. The whole, like, Flavor Unit, you know, gang was there from
Latifah
the beginning.
Too?
Latifah too. They really, really supported us early on. LL Cool J, really, really. Def Jam. I introduced myself one day to Russell Simmons at the Time Cafe. He and I had only spoken on the phone. And he put down his cell phone, which was the size of a brick.
Of course.
And he's like, I got to go. Tracy Clowerty is here. And I was like, he knows who I am. And he was like, of course. We talked on the phone and you've been playing my records. And so Def Jam got into business with us really, really early on, too.
Russell did not manage to say anything psychotic or disrespectful the first time you met him?
Russell's Russell.
There's always a chance that even if he respects you, he'll be like, turn around, let me see your ass real quick. I mean, he is a lunatic.
Yeah, he has always been great to me, and I love him to death, and I have done lots of business with him, and he's been a huge supporter.
And so right away, he understood the importance and was
absolutely.
If you needed artists for something, he would make it happen.
Yeah, and the artists themselves had, like I said, they'd never had this platform. So for them, it was like, oh my God, you're putting me on a billboard. Oh my God, you're putting me on. I remember the first time we had Biggie in the arena, and I'm walking with Puffy, and we're going through, you know, sort of the sound check and the layout. And he said, oh my God, he goes, you're putting Biggie in an arena. It wasn't done. Right. You didn't see hip-hop artists in an arena. So they didn't want that to go away either. You know, so they really worked with us. Some of it is just, you know, people are people and the culture is the culture. There's going to be some instances which were not so pleasant. But for the most part, everybody really wanted this to succeed.
Yeah.
Everybody had a vested interest in it.
I have a real jealousy of people who got to be around. I'm just not an innovator enough. Because I wish I was around through true innovation, meaning you don't know what's next. Like, you were, I made my dream come true. I made it to Hot 97. By the time I got there, though, it's a great regular radio station, but it's a regular radio station. It's a job. You go there. It's different than other places.
Yeah.
But still.
I feel you.
You know what I'm saying? Like, the fact that you were just flying by the seat of your pants, not really knowing where this whole fucking thing's going to go, must have been amazing. What were some of the early songs? Are there particular songs that when you hear it, you're like, wow.
Yeah, like that helped it jolts your mind back to that moment.
Yeah, where you're like, that was one of the breadwinners for this station. It helped put us on the map.
You know, Black Sheep. When I hear Black Sheep, when I hear Diggable Planets, mm-hmm. you know, which was just one of those, like, whoa. I mentioned Naughty by Nature, OPP, LL Cool J, Around the Way Girl. And then I met the Wu-Tang Clan, and that sort of was a whole nother, you know, situation with them. And then they were just so amazing. And
did Flex take to that record first? Did Protect Your Neck start as a Flex thing?
It started definitely on the mix shows. It didn't start with me. Most of it started on the mix shows, and then I picked it up from there. And that's what we had the mix shows for.
And so let's go back to Flex a little bit. Talk about his evolution from, I don't want to talk on the radio, to the person who we now know.
You know, again, I guess people have something in them. You know, you asked about me with the Iron Fist. I guess there must have been a little bit of that in me to begin with. And I guess there must have been a little bit of an egomaniacal person in Flex.
Oh, yeah. Flex definitely, maybe he was shy and not wanting to talk on the mic back then because he was just all about DJing and the music. Mm-hmm. But he had some people that he felt disrespected him and had a vendetta against him. You know what I'm saying? Like, you've heard stories of him, like, I think he got fired from the radio and then he called a label and the label's like, you're just a regular nigga now. And to this day, he tells that story, like, that fueled him.
You know, that's an interesting point you bring up, because you develop this false sense of that you matter.
Yeah.
And you only matter insofar as what you do for other people.
Right.
In this world.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's just the way it is. And unfortunately, the sooner you learn that lesson, the less painful it is.
Yeah.
It's harder to learn it later on.
Have you relearned that lesson, Zai?
I just have it now.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Like, it hit me hard once, and then that's just my life code now.
What? That?
Like, no one gives a fuck. Like, who are you?
When you're not able to do for them.
Yeah, for somebody.
Like, what percentage of industry people that you heard from on the regular have
fun? Oh, no, I'm cool with industry people.
Your friends?
Cool, yeah. That's what I'm saying. When I left Hot, I already knew that was going to happen. I'm not playing their record, so why would they want to talk to me? And then there's some that are like cool people
a friend.
Like, we made friendships as we went along, but like nobody I would invite to my daughter's baby shower. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a couple.
Right.
There are a few that are real, genuine people that will stay your friends no matter what, because they've been your friends.
But that's life, though. Like,
yes.
And you meet some of them at work. And our work was not just at the radio station. Our work was in the industry.
Right.
See, that's a really good point. The work never stopped. You know, the work was the parties and the events. And
did you like the partying part?
It was a big part of my... It became my entire social life for a long time. And
you had to be getting, like... You were getting fucking felt.
Yeah, like,
you were a powerful person.
Yeah, at what point
everybody
did it become...
was kissing your ass?
You know, it's overwhelming. I was a very cautious person because of that. Because I knew all along, like, a lot of these people were not really my friends.
Yeah,
and they needed me for whatever they needed me for. And you know, intellectually, I knew that. But you know, I'm human too. You know, you can't. You're like, whoa. But I never
free drinks and free drinks.
But
it's fantastic, no matter who you are.
I never, you know, I really tried to not take advantage of that kind of a situation, and I didn't want to owe anybody anything.
Right,
that was like a big thing with me, that I didn't want to owe anybody.
Well, that's a lesson that Sife taught me about, like, also having to be careful about who you owe something to.
Yes,
like, even if someone seems like a nice person who you might want to do a favor for, if I get the impression that maybe down the road you're not the most squeaky clean person, then I don't want to do a favor for you, because once you do a favor for someone, it's a relationship you may not want to have.
Right. I did, listen, people don't realize it, but I did a lot of favors for a lot of artists.
Of course.
And I did it because those artists had supported Hot 97, you know, really, really to the nth degree.
And what do you consider a favor like that? Is it maybe pushing for a record that you didn't actually think was that great, but you gave them the benefit of the doubt?
Yeah, that's happened many times. And one of the things, and, you know, as I said, I share the credit for Hot 97 with a bunch of people because it was definitely a collective. But one of the things that I'm not going to share credit for, because it's totally me, is I have incredible ears and I can usually tell what's going to be a hit. Yeah. And I'm good at finding talent and developing talent. So if I knew something wasn't going to be a hit and I still gave it the benefit of the doubt because the artists themselves had a wealth of material or they were really supportive of us, I wasn't usually wrong.
Wait, so you're not wrong, like, so it wasn't a hit?
It wasn't a hit.
But their next record probably was.
Right, because you're not going to bat 1,000 all the time, you know?
But you still played it because they asked for it.
Because I wanted to support the artists in the same way they supported us.
Oh, wait, hold on 1 second, Cypher Sounds. Hold on, Tracy Clardy. Let's take a quick break to shout out our friends at Bevel. GetBevel.com. How does your razor do for you? How does your face feel? Do you have coarse hair? Are you getting, like, razor bumps? Are you feeling disgusting? Well, that means you're not using Bevel, okay? Bevel is designed for listeners of Juan Epstein. Yes, yes, specifically. They go deep into a dungeon, and they create a razor meant for the Juan Ep listener. If you need a razor that makes your skin feel amazing and luxurious and not, like, chafed and in pain and red, well, then I suggest you use Bevel. And don't you want to support the Juan Epstein podcast? These guys are the reason I'm able to convince Sife to do this podcast every week. Am I right, Sife? So head over to getbevel.com and use the code Juan Ep. That's getbevel.com. Use the code Juan Ep and they'll hook you up with that discount right now. All right? Getbevel.com. So why eventually did you go away from Ed and Dre? Did they start? Was the money get too crazy? I remember hearing.
I know I got a good story.
Because I have heard a story about their money.
I know we used to go on these great adventure company outings, right?
No, that was Maya. They were only programming
outings. Yeah, you're right.
Because I'm a roller coaster fan.
Oh, me too. I love roller coasters. All right.
So we went to this. I was still fairly new, but I was invited, and Ed was there. And Ed told me, he's like, yeah, you got to do shit like this, because my contract's about to be up. I'm about to hit him over the head. And then...
And that was the end. He tried to hit him over the head.
I guess.
I thought he got 7 figures at some point.
I think this was the next round.
Oh, after that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, at some point, they got a lot of money. They got paid in a way that people like in our shoes now don't get paid.
Well, yes, they got paid for, you know, they were worth it.
They were definitely worth it.
They were worth it at, you know, the time. And no one wants to pay that kind of money, especially on a radio station that's struggling to convince advertisers that even though at this point we were the #1 station in New York.
Still fighting advertisers.
Still fighting.
Hold on. And by the way, that means #1, 18 to 34. Overall #1.
Overall #1.
Killing it.
I had 43 #1 books consecutively during my tenure.
Consecutively.
And, you know, and it's interesting.
And by the way, I'd like to point out that within 2 months of me leaving, it dropped to #2.
Really?
Yes.
That was what? 2 months of what?
Within 2 months of her leaving.
Oh.
By the way, it's very interesting to point it out, too, because, like, you know, a lot of stations without a, quote, competition, a competitor will do very well. But the amazing thing about Hot at that time was it wasn't an issue of no competitor.
We had competitors.
You created the format. So, like, you decided to jump out the window and compete with everyone.
Exactly.
And then won. And then eventually, you know, now 6 years later, being able to keep the numbers maybe is a little different than the numbers at first because now you're able to coast on something that you've created.
Right.
But you earned that for yourself, right? And then everything changes when competition comes along, but we can get to that story when it comes. So they were necessary to spend the money, even though you're #1 overall, you're killing it, so you got to spend the money on them. But the second you spend the money, and I've always been, this is always a lesson I've gotten from Flex and Ebro about asking for too much money, is that the second you get too much money, everything changes. Like, and you have a tendency to expectations change. And now what you deliver is inherently different. And so was the getting big money the beginning of the end?
I don't really know how to answer that question. There was a combination of things that, you know, all good things come to an end. Things run their course. Sometimes things need to evolve. And the station evolved. The station was evolving throughout all of this. I mean, at one point, we were trying to do an East Coast, West Coast thing. And then we realized, okay, this is not going to fly here. It's just too local. We have to do this. And then we decided mixtapes became a big thing. So some of the mixers that we used to have on that used to have those names from when we first started, you know, maybe they weren't as relevant, and maybe we needed a K-Slay, and maybe we needed a DJ Clue. And the ratings were not sort of equaling the amount of money that we were putting out for the morning show at some point. And we coasted with that for as long as we could, but that was the only day part that there was left for growth.
Mm. Got it.
You know, we were number one already in Afternoon Drive. We were number one nights.
Is Angie already? This is number one with Angie?
Yes, at this point, Angie was
on.
Who
was Afternoons before Angie?
Wendy Williams.
Oh, of course. She was relevant. She had a good run. I forgot about that. So yes. Wendy was Afternoons to start
and
out.
And Angie was nights.
Okay, and Angie was nights.
So Wendy wasn't.
And Flex was weekends.
Flex was late nights.
Flex was late nights.
And
got
Angie
it.
Was his board op. And that's how Angie got to be a DJ, because she was talking on the air.
Got it, with Flex.
But even before that, Wendy, we bought Kiss FM. So we combined the two radio stations into one company, and Wendy was on KISS. She had worked for Hot 97 years before.
Right.
And then when we acquired KISS, it made more sense to put her on an Afternoon Drive.
Wait, she worked for Hot 97?
She worked for Hot 103.
Oh, she did?
Yes, she was an overnight DJ.
Holy shit.
And then she was at 98.7, and then we bought KISS.
She left the market, and she went to another city, okay. And then when she came back, she was working at KISS.
And was Wendy... I guess, how poppin' was Wendy as an afternoon?
Poppin'.
She was amazing.
Poppin'.
She was an amazing air personality.
Yeah.
Because like,
I was not there. I was there when she was there, but I was nobody. But like, I love Angie, and that's what I remember. But now thinking about it, because we're talking about it, Wendy before that was poppin', yo.
So when Wendy left, why did Wendy leave? Did she just get offered more money to go to BLS or wherever she went?
No, she had a non-compete. She couldn't even work in the marketplace for a while.
So how did it end?
It ended badly.
Okay. That's not a shocking.
You never heard this story?
I forget.
The fight with Angie and Wendy?
That was the end?
That was the beginning of it, because at that some point, she had made so many enemies of so many artists that it was affecting us doing business overall in the radio station. And we also couldn't keep her safe, which is, I don't think, something she ever appreciated, was that... You know, we really had a safety issue. Like, people were threatening her and
stuff. So not only is it bad for business, because as much as we want to be edgy, we can't have every artist hate us. We need artists.
You need the artists.
And number two, right, we have to physically care about your well-being.
And everybody else's that were
around
at the station. And, you know, there was this constant conflict with the other DJs. And we really didn't know how we were going to resolve the issue. So we sort of, after that fight in the studio.
Do you remember the fight well?
Yes, of course.
Were you there for it?
Yes.
You know, you physically saw it.
It was by the bathroom,
it was by the water cooler, I thought, by the bathroom.
I mean, it's not far from the studio, but yeah. It went down, son.
I'm not going to get into the details of that. I don't know what the statute of limitations are on that.
Well, I'll tell you what I heard, because I have no horse. Well, I do have a horse in this race, but I don't know the other horse. Not to call her a horse, but anyways. But the story as I know it, was that, and granted, you know, the winners tell the story, and at Hot 97, obviously, Angie was the winner. The story as I know it is that Wendy said something, and then Angie saw her and came up to her in the hallway, and Angie, like,
she
didn't.
She said something about Q-Tip, I think.
Oh, and then Angie punched her in the face. That's the story that I know.
Angie was going out with Q-Tip
right
at the time.
And Angie punched her in the face. Is that close to what you've heard, you recall?
There's probably a lot more details, but that just...
You know, again, I don't want to, you know, be into people's business. There's
good.
You know,
you're handling it well.
Angie's about to put out a book. You think it's not in the book?
It better
be in the
book.
If
Angie doesn't put it in the book, we got a fucking problem.
You know what? It's Angie's story to tell.
Okay.
Tell you that, you know, I was sitting in my office and Angie came into me and basically said, okay, this just happened. And then I went back there to find Wendy brandishing a broom.
What?
Grab the broom.
Where the fuck did she get a broom?
I still wouldn't know where to find a broom at Hot 97.
It was just one of those, there was so many surreal things that have happened. Like, I can tell you so many crazy stories, you know, from Father MC to being served on the air with, you know, papers for unpaid child support.
No way. Father MC getting served papers as a father while on the air.
Aaron Hall being served on our float in the African American Day Parade.
What? So basically, Hot 97 was just used as a catalyst for people to get served their papers.
Well, because people knew where they would be.
Right.
You know, Noriega got arrested in the dressing room at Summer Jam. You know, there's a lot of things like that. So there's so many stories. The Angie Wendy thing is just
so
one of them.
So that was basically it. It was like, this has reached a head. We got to move on.
No, we just didn't know how to handle the situation at that point. So to buy us some time, we just said, okay, well, we're going to take Wendy off the air, and we suspended her indefinitely. I wouldn't even use the word suspend. We took her off the air, and we were still paying her while we figured out what to do next. I mean, this was uncharted territory. We didn't really know how to handle it. She then took matters into her own hand, and she sued us.
Oh, yeah.
She sued us to be allowed out of her contract. So she was never fired, and there's a very good chance we would have worked something out and moved into a different day part, figured something out, but we never got the chance.
So that was that.
And then she sued us, and eventually, you know, she left. She left the marketplace, and then she came back later on BLS or...
BLS.
Yeah, BLS was next. And did you maintain a relationship with her?
Yeah, we're on speaking terms.
So you're cool. Cool enough.
I try to be cool with everybody if possible. Some of them are not cool with me, but that's on them.
How are you and Angie? You and Angie cool?
We're having dinner Wednesday.
So cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, send her my love.
I will.
I love Angie.
Because I forgot when Hot, we were at Hot, and I'm telling this story as a young intern, like just kind of like hearing in the hallways and hearing
so Spanish at the time, by the way. Very so Puerto Spanish. Rican. You were so Puerto Rican back then.
I'm actually more Puerto Rican now.
Really?
I wasn't Puerto Rican back then at all.
But you looked so Puerto Rican.
No.
Big shirts, chains,
that was
skinny. I know.
But that it made you look more Puerto Rican.
I know.
That was hip-hop.
Now he's such like a white improv nerd.
But then I remember like when I first heard Hot or Emmis was buying Kiss. And everybody, like, I was like... That's when I first realized, like, oh, shit could just change in radio at any moment. Like, who the fuck saw that coming? And then Red, who's Flex's mentor, had his final show. Flex basically, like played whack shit all night to let Red get his final show. And Flex was listening to Red Alert on his final show, crying. And it was like.
But we moved him on to Hot.
No, I know. So,
but at the time,
he went to a bigger platform.
End of 98.7 Kiss FM Red Alert show, which Flex probably started Flex along with Chuck Chillout. And then he beat him to death.
Right.
He beat him
savagely.
To death. And then the last show, he just laid down and like let him just go out gloriously. And then he came to. I remember the first time Red was on the air, it was Wendy. And Red Alert, I heard this on the air. Red was trying to talk to Wendy through the studio mic, but it went on the air. He goes, this shit is crazy. I'm trying to figure this shit out. I don't know which buttons is which.
I've never heard that before.
I just remembered it. She's like, how you doing, Red? He's like, this shit is crazy. I'm trying to figure this shit out.
I've never heard that before. That's me.
I actually have another Red Alert story, and then we'll get back to your original point of why the morning show had to change.
Yes, we'll bring them back. Right.
Look at you. Keeping shit on point.
It's like she knows how to do radio.
Yeah, like I do, actually. So, you know, we acquired Kiss FM, and at some point we acquired CD 101, which was the smooth jazz station. And these people wore pantyhose and pearls to work. So we all ended up down in 395 Hudson Street, and there was a clash of the culture, to say the least, because you've got this hip hop side and then you've got these people wearing suits and pantyhose and pearls. So one day the receptionist is on the PA system and she says, Red Alert to the front desk, Red Alert to the front desk. And three people from CD 101 grabbed their bags and went running out, thinking that we were having like a fire drill or an alarm or something.
No!
Because they didn't know who Red Alert was.
That's incredible. They just thought it was a Red Alert. when the station was going down. The guy knew this hip hop place would burn to the ground.
Exactly.
Oh my God. All right. So how do you end up transitioning over to star in Buck Wild?
Wait, was star right after Ed and Dre?
No, we tried a few different things. We tried Ed alone with Steph Lover for
a
while.
Right, I remember that. Okay, yeah.
We tried out a couple of different things.
The Lover Show, Ed and Steph?
Yeah, it was called something like that.
It was No Relation, Just Creation. Ed Lover and Steph Lover in the morning.
Lover, something with Lovers.
No Relation, Just Creation.
Wow, okay.
It was funny, Flex fought for Steph Lover to come over. And then, the crazy shit that happened with them.
Wow, really?
Yeah, he fought for her. I remember he was like, yo, this is a girl in D.C. She be rapping on the air. She's dope.
So that's so interesting. Okay, so so she tried a few different things. None of them stuck.
We tried a few different things, and so we should get to the star story because it's so...
And you have a job to do, I know. Okay.
I have to actually get to work some point. So my point about the morning show was it was the only day part where there was room for growth, really. We were never going to grow as much as we wanted to in middays because we weren't office friendly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the only place...
People didn't want to hear Buck 'em down at the office?
Now, at this point, the station's very commercialized and hip-hop is now becoming commercial.
Right. And I'll be there. There's Method Man and Mary and there's like lots of stuff.
But we weren't day parting. Like everything was playing all throughout the day. You know, mornings, afternoons, evenings,
nights.
Didn't
matter.
So... I got this package in the mail from someone that wanted to be a writer for Ed Lover and Dr. Dre. And it sat on my desk in a pile for about a month. And I was finally cleaning out my desk. And I popped in the cassette and I started to read through some of the stuff, which was not very well spelled, but was actually funny. There was some stuff that was really, really funny. And it was from Star. So I called him. You know, he had called me first, and I said, submit your material to me. So I took it was a cold call. I took the call. He submitted the material. It sat there. And then when I finally read through it, I thought, some of this stuff is really, really funny. So I brought him in to write for Ed Lover and to come up with bits. And Ed didn't really like doing other people's stuff. He sort of was more into his own stuff. And they had different senses of humor.
Definitely.
Yes,
like, in different viewpoints. So it didn't really work, but I felt like Star was valuable in and of himself. So we gave him and his Buck.
But Star had the column in The Source that was called Buck Wild. There was no real Buck Wild. He was Buck Wild.
Right.
And the Source thing, where you just talk shit.
He talked a lot of shit, and then we gave him this Sunday night show.
Oh, yeah.
At 1 in the morning on a Sunday night, just to see how they'd sound on the air. And it was hilarious. I mean, some of the stuff they came up with was just so funny that...
God, if you heard it now, we'd probably be like, this could never...
It could never fly today.
Never fly anymore.
It could never fly today.
I mean, most of his show couldn't fly anymore. But particularly back then, I'm sure, the 1 a.m. must have been crazy.
It was. It was genius. I think he was brilliant.
Totally.
And the stuff that they came up with, they were talking about, you know, the exchange rate of food stamps to Lucy's, and they talked about it like it was the Wall Street Journal. They called it the Amsterdam Avenue Journal, and they had like this whole financial thing about, you know, how much money you'd get for selling your food stamps and how much was a Lucy and stuff. All of it was just brilliant, and... They really were satirical, and I don't even think they realized it.
Now, did Ed know at this point? Me and Sife used to always make the joke, when we see someone get the late night show, or like the real early morning, that this person might be coming for your slot, or he didn't think about it?
Well, I don't think Ed was there. I think at this point, and I'm not...
Oh, it was... Okay, got it.
So I think at this point, like, his contract had ended. He left... we left on very good terms. He had another job lined up, and I think he went to Philly at the time. And
did he go to L.A.?
No, he went to L.A. You're absolutely right. He went to L.A.
Power 106.
And it was the Beat.
He went to the Beat.
Sorry.
He left MS,
yes.
Right.
He left MS.
Right, but Steve Smith went over to L.A. and recruited Ed
Steve
again.
Smith
did
went,
it again. Right, that worked before. I'll do it again.
Right.
Why not?
It didn't work. Anyway, so he left on very good terms. It wasn't like we had a bad breakup or anything else. And shout out to Ed Lover. I think he's great, and he's always going to be my guy. So we had been trying out just different people in the morning show. So there was nobody that was really in that slot to feel like, oh my God, like someone's going to get this. They knew somebody was going to get it. So we put Star on from 5 to 6 in the morning to get him used to early mornings and to see what he can do. And then we gave him the morning show, which is a big deal to go from 1 hour, you know, once a week providing content
and
to
with
4 hours
a day. And with no
radio
name whatsoever.
No radio name whatsoever. And I remember us being at Judy Ellis's house at 6 a.m, all of us listening to that first show, you know, waiting and with our, you know, waiting and waiting and waiting and being like, okay, is this really going to work? Is this really going to work? And it was rough. Like, it was definitely, it was a build. It didn't happen overnight. It was a build, but he started to make a name for himself, and we started to go up a 10th. Then we were flat. Then we went up a 10th, then another 10th, then another 10th. To the point where he is the only DJ to ever have beaten Howard Stern in New York City.
In a book, right?
It was in one book.
One quarter.
It was one quarter, but it's
that's fine.
On my watch. And I
Exactly.
And I remember, you know, Howard congratulated me. Like, and
really?
Yeah. And we got to number one.
How did he call you?
He just said something on the air.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Shit.
Gave credit where it was due.
He just said shout out to, you know, to the PD over at Hot 97 and what they're doing.
By the way, I have recently decided, though, and I'm a big Howard admirer as a safe, that I believe, because it's interesting you say that he did that, Howard's still on some shit, yo. Even all these years later, as accomplished as he is, he plays dumb about people in radio sometimes to the point that I'm like, get the fuck out of here, bro.
What do you mean?
Someone brought up Mike Francesa the other day, and Howard straight up was just like, what does he do? Is he popular? And I'm like, bro, they write about him in the Daily News every other day. And when Flex came up somewhat recently and he played the whole Flex rant,
yeah,
he talks about him like he has literally no clue who he is. And I'm like, in one sense, I used to think, well, of course he doesn't. And then I was like, nah, man, he's still just a petty radio guy like all of us. And he still keeps people down a peg by like acting like he has no clue.
I don't know that he did. I mean, he mentioned me another time on the air because my picture was in the paper, and he was just, and I had met him a couple of times.
He was like, oh, who's this woman PD?
He said, how come our PD doesn't look like this? You know, and I called to say thank you, and they put me on the air.
No way.
Which was like this, like, I'm in my office, and I'm on the air with Howard Stern, which was just not expected. That's which dope. Is kind of weird.
So the star thing became crazy. It was like one of those things, like, you just never knew what the fuck this guy was going to say, what he was going to play. Well, you know, he would play random rock music and stuff, too.
And it drove me crazy. We fought.
Would that be the hardest thing for you?
You know, we fought like cats and dogs. But he respected me, and he treated me with more respect than anybody else. And
you mean more respect than he treated anyone else?
Yes.
I wouldn't say respect is the number one word I associate with Star.
No, but so if I put my foot down about something, he would usually acquiesce. It would be a fight.
Right.
You know, and
like
then,
a good morning host should be, though. You should fight for what you believe is, especially when you're making that much of an impact, you have to fight for it.
But there also had to be balance. You know, we also still had responsibilities, and we still had to deal with the fact that people's safety and, you know, this was volatile. I mean, people had already gotten killed and shot and stuff. Like, you can't, this wasn't just a regular show. You know, we actually impacted people's lives and deaths. And, you know, we just had to balance that responsibility. So, you know, Star, he was amazing. He was brilliant. And I don't think you could get away with that on radio anymore, but that's what really, you know, it was a big platform and...
The hater.
He did something...
The hater.
There was no reality TV. There was no this people putting people down. Yeah. Or, you know, he was sort of like, instead of just kissing people's asses, he was just putting it out there. This is how we felt. And he did things that sometimes I would just... I'd be in my bed listening at 6 a.m, crying in laughter, which I would never admit that then because he'd be saying shit about an artist or whatever. Right. And I'd be saying, oh my God, this is so true.
<You know? laughs> Now you also then were still there when it ended for Star and he went to Power.
Yes.
But I guess real quick.
Then we still beat him.
And I know we got to wrap up. You got to go to work, but
This is not even it. We're not even in the middle.
I know. We're going to hold on. But what happens when Power 105 goes on the air? That had to be somewhat a big deal. It changes the landscape of
radio. We were still
radio.
Number one, so it didn't impact us as much as people thought it was going to impact
first.
Us. Well, not,
or not on
I
your
there.
Watch. Okay.
I don't know what happened on anyone else's watch, but not
but
on
it
my
did,
watch.
They didn't. So, but didn't they start out with this whole, like, no commercials ever... they had like,
no, like a month.
They did a month of zero commercials, right?
I don't remember what they started with. It was a long time ago, and it wasn't. What they did do was they brought back a bunch of people that I had basically
created.
and fired or taken them off the air for whatever reason, or they had left because their time was done. You know, I don't want to come across as sounding, you know, bitchy in that way. I'm not trying to be. These people had their time and it was over. So they brought back a lot of those people hoping to recreate something. You can't always recreate a moment in time, especially in something like hip hop where it's ever changing and fluid and, you know, evolving. So they ended up coming across as sounding a little bit dated and older demographic than what we were doing. So it wasn't as big of an impact as people thought it would be. You know, they certainly had some, and, you know, they had smart people, you know, working over there, but they changed a lot since then, too.
Yeah,
a lot. Since their first incarnation. Like, that first year, it was sort of like, you know, dirt off my shoulders.
Right. I'm sure it was. But then you were still there when Star and Envy got into it, right?
When Star and Envy got it.
Or was that already after you left? It was like, I thought it was 05. I thought it was, you were probably still there.
When did you leave?
She left in 06, 10 years ago.
Damn, 10 years, fuck.
Maybe, no, I don't think I was there, actually. I was not there.
No, that was an Ebro thing.
That was an Ebro thing?
No, okay. Back up. The timeline is off here. I was definitely there when Star left, because then I put Joe Budden on the morning show.
Exactly,
and
right.
Envy. So we talked about this, how I, you know, wanted Joe Budden and Envy, and that was, and they, I thought they would have been a viable morning show, and they actually did do very well, but Joe couldn't commit to the schedule.
If Joe wanted to do radio instead of being a rapper, it would have worked.
100%.
It would have worked, and he's very personable, and he's funny as AF. I don't know what I can say.
You can say it all.
Funny as fuck.
He really is.
And it worked. There was chemistry, and with some, we were just starting to build it and direct it and give it substance. And, you know, a morning show really needs to have someone that knows how to put it together, as well as someone that's funny and creative. That's why Star and I did work together, because I understood the structure that needed to work in, and he was able to supply the content. So I think if we had helped develop that morning show, it would have been a really good one. But I remember distinctly being backstage at Summer Jam, and, you know, Joe was in some beef with some rapper. I can't even remember who it was. And they got into, like, a verbal clash, and he just decided that he didn't want to do it anymore.
Oh, because of the relationship problems it was causing, because he had to talk about people.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things, and also the lifestyle. You know, it's really, you know.
And also, if you come after Star, you think that's the way to do it. You got to, like, go at people.
And then you try doing it. You're like, oh, now I have to go out in the world still.
Yeah.
It's different. Radio hosts don't always go out in the world. Sometimes they talk their shit and they go home.
Right. And then we had Sway in the morning, and Sway is great. But, again, the same thing, to try to follow Star, you know. And
Sway is so nice to follow Star. Like, Sway is so nice a person.
Yeah.
Like, he's, like, almost too nice a person to possibly jump in after Star.
No, it was really too hard for him to do that. Like, he just couldn't. You know, he's a great personality, a great radio personality, but people were used to a certain type of morning show, and he was not going to be the same kind of morning show.
Okay, we have to let's run through a couple of the other controversies or exciting moments. Were you involved in the Michael Jackson plan for Summer Jam? Were you?
Yes, I was involved in the Michael Jackson plan, in and of that Jay said to us, this is what I'd like to do.
You said Michael Jackson?
Yes, he told us that he'd like to bring out Michael Jackson. Obviously, we had no objection to that. I mean, it was a huge moment, and he pulled it off. He was the one that put it all together, because one of the reasons why Jay is so successful as an artist and an entrepreneur is that he always tries to top himself. And he had done Summer Jam for us several times at that point, and he wanted each one to be a moment. So he made that happen.
Did you know Jay would be a megastar? Like, I didn't. You know, when I bought Reasonable Doubt the week
ago. Excuse me?
Sorry. I know. I'm sorry. It's so embarrassing. I bought Reasonable Doubt, you know, right when it came out, when no one, at least in the D.C. area, no one gave a shit. I was just a random underground rapper who I liked. I did not think I'm looking at the future greatest of all time. Did you, or at what point did it transition? You're like, oh, this guy's, like, really, really going to be a big, big deal.
Well, I always thought he had a lot of talent, which is why we were there for him. When he was on Payday Records, I mean, what was that? In My Lifetime. It was like the first song we played. And I told you, him and Damon Dash came up to me in the Palladium. And then they came to my office to play me music on a cassette. Like, I knew he would be a big star, not only because he was talented, but because he was smart. And because he was never, like, when he went into the joint venture with Def Jam, he was very smart and business savvy, as well as being extremely talented. And the music just kept getting bigger and better, and he wasn't afraid to take some risks, like, collaborating with Linkin Park and things like that that were just not done at this point. And, yeah, I did. And also I remember one time we had him in our ad campaign, and he was so nondescript in the ad campaign. He was just in a Hot 97 t-shirt and jeans, and we looked
Timberlands.
At Tim's, we looked at the photos, and he didn't have like the presence of a Buster, like from a visual standpoint, mm-hmm. or the Fugees or whatever we did. And I remember calling him up and saying, we really want to reshoot this. Can you bring the white suit and hat that you wore? And I forgot what the video was. And he did. He was one of the few artists that he was like, you're right. I don't want to be on these billboards if I'm not going to make an impact.
Yeah.
And he did. And he came and he reshot. And, you know, he understood the value of the marketing. And not a lot of artists did.
Cypher, are there any other major, what major events pop in your mind that we haven't mentioned at all? I mean, if there's there's many.
There's too many.
You were gone for, whatchamacallit, Tsunami Song.
Well, no, I was still a consultant for the Tsunami Song, actually. I had just left, and the last piece of advice I gave to the program director at the time was, don't mess with the Asian community. And
why was that on the top of the list?
Because, you know...
Did something happen before that?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
You
don't just think that up out of nowhere.
No.
Yo, by the way, don't mess with the Asian community.
You know what? So, like, everyone, like, you could hate on a lot of people. You can be an equal opportunity. Like, that was Star's thing. But there was one community of people that would coalesce and that they didn't find it funny. So I said to him, you know, listen, pretty much everybody's fair game in jest. I said, but try not to mess with the Asian, you know, culture. And then they did. And it was just like, you got to be kidding me. Like, this is, I specifically warned you about this.
How now, did you know when it happened or not till it blew up? Because like, some people weren't even aware. Like, the first day kind of like slips away and they throw away bad radio bit. And then it was a couple days later, right, that it started like really creeping
up. Well, they called me and they like for advice like of what to do. And I mean, I gave them the best advice I could and they took some of it and, you know, it was what it was. It had to play itself out. I feel very badly that a bunch of people lost their jobs over it when they didn't do that in a vacuum either.
Right. It was a horrible bit, by the way. You know me. If something's really offensive, I'm able to point out offensive but funny. Nothing's worse than offensive and not funny. Like, that's as bad. Like, when I remember when I heard it, I was like, where's the punchline? You're literally just like, this is horrible.
It was a bad bit, but people knew it was going on the air.
And it happened.
You know, they knew that it was happening. It was not put on the air, you know, without anyone's knowledge.
Do you remember hearing the Star Aaliyah stuff?
Well, yes, because I was there at the time.
I know. Did you know it was bad, though, when it happened on the air? Were you like, oh? Or was it throwaway at the time? And
it was one of those, you know, you're laying in bed at 7 in the morning, and you hear this, and you're like, oh, my God, what did he do now? And you get there, and you realize that it was not it was a little bit more contrived than that, you know, that they definitely had talked about it in the room, and you know, Miss Jones was going to have her stance on it because she didn't agree with it. And she said, you can do it. I'm going to make sure that I'm going to distance myself from this. So, you know, his job is to get ratings. And it was in extremely bad taste. But in his mind, he was doing his job, which was to create controversy. And he certainly succeeded at that.
Did Dame come to the station? Is that true?
I believe he did. I just don't remember. A lot of people came. There was a lot of backlash around that.
Backhands, too. Hey-o!
Hey-o! Is there one thing you're, besides the 43, was it 43 straight books?
Yes.
What else are you most proud of about the legacy there? Cypher and do you, Sounds. And Cypher Sounds, of course, molding him. And what are you most proud of? And also, does Hot 97 come up every single day of your life? Does someone bring it up to you every day? Or are you at a point now where you're deep in BET, you're living your own life, you're not thinking about Hot 97?
I haven't listened to Hot 97 in
Thanks a lot, Trace.
Many years. I've got to be really, really honest about that. It's probably been a good 3-4 years.
Either. Well, because you weren't interested once you were gone, because it wasn't, doesn't remind you of what it used to be, because you just like moving forward? Like, what's the why?
Well, a combination of reasons. One, hip hop's not my first love in terms of music. So if I'm listening, and I went into alt rock radio after I left, you know, Hot 97. So I sort of immersed myself in a whole nother culture. And that is my first choice of music to listen to. And then, you know, the station changed, radio changed. I don't spend a lot of time with the radio, period. When I got a car, I started listening to the radio again, but now I listen to satellite radio most of the time because I can choose what music I want to hear. And I'm not a morning person, so I wasn't listening to morning radio anyway. So it was less about not really liking it and more like it just really suited my lifestyle.
It's not really who you are when you're not working in it.
Yeah, and it didn't suit my lifestyle at that point.
And what about what you're proud of besides the domination of 4 years of straight books?
4 years, 11 years.
Sorry, but 43 straight, sorry. Overall 11.
So it's 4 books a year.
Oh shit, I forgot, sorry.
Yeah, books were different back
then. It wasn't monthlies then, it was quarterly. My bad.
I was number one for 11 years
11
straight.
Years straight. Yes. Yeah, so guys, around 6-7 years ago it changed and it became these stupid monthly books. So that's where my head was. But yes, so 43 books over 11 years. Besides that,
I mean,
that's a hard one to beat.
Being part of something, creating something that is so enduring and has become like it became a global phenomena even before the internet. Like people would go into Europe and there would be Hot 97 bootleg mixtapes being sold on the street. And this is before the internet. So how did they even know? You know, to me, that was kind of amazing that we influenced the culture so much, that slang is now being used by newscasters, that these people are now fashion designers with million-dollar industries, that they're household names, that, you know, white dudes on OKCupid say things to me like for shizzle, you know?
What do you mean white guys on OKCupid? Rewind.
Are you on OKCupid?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm writing a book about it.
About your experience in the dating world, like the online dating world?
Yeah, I don't actually date any of them. I just save the funny messages and I post them on my Facebook. I have a huge following for it.
No way. Now, real quick, give out the places where people can find you socially.
So you can't find me on Facebook unless we're actually friends, and that's sort of personal for me. But you can follow me on Twitter at Tracy Cloherty. I'm almost never on Twitter, but please follow me. I am on Instagram. It's IceQueen212. Star gave me that nickname. We never talked about it.
Right. Why did Star give you that nickname?
Because he said I was a cold bitch.
Okay. And naturally.
And I liked it, so I kept it, and it sort of stuck, and now it's just become a joke, and I've had it for a long, long time.
Shawnee told me he remembered that on your office door at some point you had a life-size Missy She's a Bitch promo poster.
And my boss did, too. My boss said, you know,
Judy?
Yeah, she took one home with her.
Oh, you guys both like that?
Yeah, we definitely love that.
And did you always keep a good relationship with this, sorry guys, inside radio talk, with the Rick Cummings and the Jeff Simoleons?
So Rick and I had dinner last Friday. So we are still in touch, and we still see each other on a regular basis. Judy is still one of my, you know, dearest friends. And
what does she do?
She's retired, traveling the world, having a great time.
Living the life.
So, yeah, I try to stay on good terms with everyone, and I love these people. I spent 20 years of my life with them.
Had you seen Big Cap recently before, at any point recently before he passed?
I had not, and I was really actually devastated by that because he was one of the nicest guys I've ever met in my life.
Okay, this is what we've been going over. Like, you know, when someone passes away, everyone's like, oh, they were so nice. He really was the nicest guy.
He was a doll.
Like, I can't get over that part of it. A lot of the old school guys who I'd meet had like kind of mixed feelings on me, I could tell. And when I'd meet them, I could tell they were like, oh, what's your deal? Not Big Cap. It was just like, hey, like, he was just such a nice guy.
He really, really was.
And Syfe credited him a few weeks ago on the podcast, one of my favorite parts of that podcast, that he Flex in stealing records from his underlings, like Syfe and Big Cap. The two of the biggest records that Flex took from him were Get At Me Dog and Ain't No, which are like, you know, two of the most important records of that
time. And Ain't No is the record that Jay-Z came to play for me in my office. It didn't have Foxy Brown on it. It was just a cassette with...
And you're like, oh, it's the EPMD song with you rapping on it. I wouldn't have thought anything of that song. I just want to be...
I knew from the minute I heard it that it was going to be a smash.
I'm so stupid.
You're not... You don't...
I know.
You have to have
ears. I'm not a club guy.
I didn't finish my social. Okay, so let me see. IceQueen212 is my Instagram.
There you go.
IceQueenTracy is my Snapchat, and I'm a huge Snapchatter. And we better get a picture of us for Snapchat.
Yeah, of course. We're going to snap it.
I'm going to do snap.
Syfe doesn't... Syfe, like, won't... I don't know what it is about... snap that he doesn't understand or like, but it's just not happening.
You know, I didn't, when I first downloaded it like 2 years ago, I didn't really get into it. And it's only been like in the last few months that I've started really playing with it. And it's just a lot of fun. And what can I say?
I'm down for fun.
I'm essentially a 16-year-old girl. I just refuse to grow up.
Good.
And by the way, I told Syfe, I think he'd love Snapchat because I hate his Instagram. I want it only to be Snap. His Instagram should only be Snapchat. Because Snapchat, the beauty of it is, Syfe doesn't give a shit about pictures enough to really like be like, I'm going to go take a great picture.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what it's for.
That's what people these days use Instagram for, though.
Oh.
So your Instagram will just be like, he'll throw some picture up, and I'll look at it, and I'm like, Syfe, this picture has like 12 likes, and it's way too low a percentage of likes, because it doesn't give a shit about the picture. Snapchat is great for shitty pictures.
Right.
But funny moments. He doesn't care. He already checked out. He already didn't give a shit.
Yeah, I don't care.
He doesn't even give a shit about
but,
what
you know,
I'm saying.
And as a comedian, I think that you would like it because you can be funny in really short bursts. And some of the stuff that my people put up shows really amazing creativity.
Yeah, and if you love what you do on it, save it, post it other places.
I do that all the time.
But if it's a throwaway joke that was kind of shit, and in the moment it was funny, it goes away. So it just,
are we talking about Tracy Clarity or Snapchat?
Both.
Come on, guys.
Well, she really likes Snapchat, apparently. I just added you. Well, Tracy, obviously we could have done 11 more hours with you, but we're honored that we got to talk to you at all.
I'm flattered that you asked me to be a guest. Thank you so
much. Yeah, we didn't even touch on anything you've done for me. And
what does she most do for you? Say it while she's here.
I'm just saying, like, there would be no Syfe Sounds without Tracy Clarity. And she,
thanks a lot, Tracy.
We
still have a future.
She gave
we
me,
should do a podcast. I told you I want to do a podcast.
No. I mean, thanks a lot for giving me Syfe.
Oh. I thought you were saying because I didn't do anything for you
no,
yet.
No. You did. You created Hot 97, which created my dreams.
Wait, did you ever try to get a job with her?
No, before she, by the time I started calling, it was John Dimmick.
Right.
So like when I first started nagging Hot 97.
Really?
Tracy was just folklore already for me. Yeah, it was John Dimmick already.
But, interesting, he didn't know this. When I was at K-Rock, I wanted to talk to him about working at K-Rock.
Really?
Me. Yeah, she
from
called,
what?
She,
from
she told me she called
DC?
Ebro.
Mm-hmm.
No,
really?
she told me she called Ebro. And Ebro tried to act coy and was like, nah.
No, and I understood, and I don't mean to, I understood he was just becoming the PD, had just found, you know, this great morning show, and he's not looking to share.
Yeah.
Selfish piece of shit.
And he was like, can we get settled? Can we see? Like, he sort of, and I understood that, and I was only there for a year
anyway.
Well,
listen, it only took 9 years for me to get a job outside of Hot 97. But eventually I settled it. But why, she believed in you early on?
You tell me.
I still believe in him.
Yeah, she gave me my first... Every shot, you know, Flex brought me in, but after that, Flex is not the boss, you know
no.
what I'm saying? Tracy's the boss.
He thinks he's the boss.
Right.
No, he definitely thinks he's the boss. But Tracy gave me... When Scribble left, she let me fill in the overnight slot that he used to have, like a Saturday mix show. She used to let me fill in. She's the one that said... When you mix, you say some funny things. You should be a jock. And I was like, what the? I don't want to be a jock. And she made me do air checks and then shit on the air checks.
That's what you're supposed to do.
And you got a job on air, didn't you?
Absolutely. But at the time, I was like, why the fuck did she ask me to do this if she thinks I suck? But now I realize it's the fucking rigmarole you got to go through. But she said she believed in me. When I make it big one day, you're in my thank you speech.
Oh, thank you.
For the main speech?
She's in there.
Up there with God.
God's not getting a shout out from Syfe.
But like Tracy, for real though, like as a grown man who now has a family and like a career, I want to thank you personally for every shot you ever gave me and believing in me and making me like, even she even said like, I think you'd be good on the morning show. You need more experience. That's why she made me go to Sirius. And I was still in New York. I didn't have to leave town to get experience. So I still got to be like Angie's fill-in and all the shit that made me today. So
he was Angie's fill-in. That was a big deal. To be the fill-in for Afternoon Drive.
That's
yo, Angie used to be like, call me first. And be like, can you do tomorrow? I'm like, yeah. She's like, okay, I'm going to call Tracy. But don't tell.
Well, because she knew that if you couldn't do it, she might not be able to get the time off because Tracy wanted you to fill in.
No, she was scared. She didn't want anyone else to do it.
Oh, because she didn't want anyone else either.
Yeah, so she would be like, all right, I'm going to call Tracy now. Like, it was always little fucking schemes. But yeah, so for everything radio-wise and what made me, thank you so much, Tracy.
You were very welcome. You know, thank you for being my friend, which is more important than all the rest of that.
I think I drove you home in my brand new car, and I was like, yeah, you did this. you got me this UConn.
Which, you had that UConn for a long time.
I didn't even have a UConn, so what was I doing wrong?
I know, I know. Believe me, something about Hot 97 DJs are really good. The DJs at Hot, to this day, are incredible at stacking their money outside the club. The amount, the cars that mix shows DJs drive at Hot 97 is psychotic.
No, listen, that was the only brand new car I ever got. It was a regular truck. Not like Envy, who drives around in fucking Porsches and shit.
Yeah, Envy's a lunatic. Different story altogether. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you for
having me. Tracy Clordy.
The great Tracy
Clordy. The Ice Queen.
Ice Queen. All right, buy one app.